Welcome to the WP Tonic This Week in WordPress and SaaS podcast, where Jonathan Denwood interviews the leading experts in WordPress, e-learning, and online marketing to help WordPress professionals launch their own SaaS.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show. This is episode 909. Oh my God, we're getting close to the big 1,000. Who can I rustle up for the 1,000 show? I'm going to have to start thinking about that, aren't I, listeners and viewers? We've got a really great guest. I know I say that every week, but I really truly mean it. We've been on a roll lately. We've had some fabulous guests. We've got Mark Szymański. I've totally butchered that, but he's grinning, so he's not flim-abandoned. Mark is the owner of Find It Tech, a web design agency on the East Coast. We're going to be discussing all things WordPress agency, what are the main competitors, and a lot of other stuff. It should be a great show. So, Mark, would you like to give a quick 10-20 second intro of yourself?
For sure, yeah. Jonathan, Kurt, thank you guys so much for having me. Yeah, you had the pronunciation right there, because I think that's more the Polish, like the sh. I've been cheating my whole life and just saying Szymański, so anything works.
I was tempted to do that, but then I went to Google, but then I do practice. This is the terrible thing, Mark. It's not that I'm ignorant. I actually do practice.
I know you mean
the names of the guests, but it makes absolutely no difference, Mark. I still balls it up.
It's all good. Yeah. I don't take offense to it. I appreciate it, brother. Thank you for the intro there. Yeah, my name is Mark Szymański. I have a YouTube channel. I'm now much more involved in like kind of the WordPress community. I've been building websites since 2018 in my agency, Find It Tech. But ultimately now I'm just, like most of us, gotten way deeper into the WordPress community aspect of it, which is, kind of a good and bad thing, can be here and there. So, I'm really enjoying it, meeting a ton of great people. I've yet to meet, a single like person in this community that I don't think means well.
You haven't been on this show yet. So, Kurt, there's quite a few people in the WordPress community I don't wish well for. And they don't wish well for me. I don't care. Would you like to introduce yourself to the listeners and viewers?
Yeah, sure. I own the agency called Mañana Nomás. We focus largely on membership and learning type websites. I also work directly with Lifter LMS and with the great Jonathan at WP Tonic.
Yes. Kurt is a great agency owner in his own right, and he really helps WP Tonic as well. So before we go into the meat and potatoes of this great show, I've got a couple of messages from our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
Hi there, tribe. It's Jonathan here, and I want to tell you about OmenSend. OmenSend is a great plugin that delivers SMS messaging and email messaging to your clients. If you're building a woo solution for your client and you're looking to provide a SMS functionality for them and great email, why don't you look at OmenSend? Got a great special deal. You can go to wp-tonic.com/deals, and they're offering 30% off the first 3 months. Plus, if you need any technical help or a migration, they're offering almost $1,000 to help migrate if you've got a group of clients that are looking for this type of service. It's a great offer. They're a great company. I highly recommend them to you. So, like I say, go over to the deals page on the WP Tonic website and you'll find more details there. Speak to you soon, folks. Bye. We're coming back, folks. Just also want to point out that we have some special offers from the major sponsors, plus a curated list of the best WordPress plugins and services. What more could you ask for? And you can get all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals. wp-tonic.com/deals. And you find all the goodies there. What more could you ask for? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get from that page. So, Mark, let's delve into it. So, basically, how did you get into web design and into agency and WordPress? What led you down this windy road, Mark?
Yeah, great question. I think I was thinking about this question, and I think there's kind of like three things that I would attribute it to. The first thing was my family, specifically my grandmother and my mom, had like a restaurant, just like a small diner here in Pittsburgh for 30 plus years. So I was always around that. I'm only 28 now. So, I was like literally there a couple weeks after I was born, right? I was always there. I was working. I was always around like entrepreneurship, hard work, things like that. So that played a big role, I think subconsciously. Then I went to college at the University of Pittsburgh, class of 2018. Started in computer engineering, moved to computer science, eventually ended up with an information science degree. So the idea there was I went from more technical to like more technical mixed with like personal skills and business stuff. So that kind of reinforced a lot of that. I learned the basis of my like website building there, HTML, CSS a little bit throughout those years, just the fundamentals. But it really gave me a good idea because I think differently about like building websites rather than from the design perspective. I think more from the development perspective. I think that's what that did for me. And then out of college, I had just a regular like corporate style job at a local real estate agency for like 2.5 years. And that experience taught me a lot in a short amount of time. I was able to kind of like climb up the ranks of a smaller team, but kind of go from working alongside people in the tech department. I was like marketing tech in a way. I wasn't in real estate, but I was working for them. I was sitting next to people that were doing like ASP.NET, like coding and stuff, while also like sending out e-blasts. Yeah, I know. And actually, that was my first experience. I was like, maybe I should do this. And I was like, no, let's try something else. And then I found WordPress and kind of from there, it kind of continued to compound. So I left that job like right before like COVID times, just because I wasn't feeling it. I just got tired of being an employee. Started my own thing, and it's been going well. We've been doing great, and it's my main thing. Obviously, the agency, and also now the content and everything like that. Just really trying to get in the community more.
So I think after your degree, I think a lot of people got kind of two choices. Either they're going to go the freelance route, and maybe then at some stage start their own agency and work for small medium. And gradually work, if they want to, work up the food chain to higher level clients. Or they can try and build a portfolio and learn CSS and then a JavaScript library, React, Vue, and really concentrate on building a really solid portfolio and a couple free clients maybe. Why did you choose not to go down the JavaScript, and try and get a coding job with one of the major Facebook, Google, that route? Why did you go down the agency route? Was there, or did it just happen, basically?
Yeah, I mean, like most things, it kind of did just kind of happen that way. But at the same time, my job that I actually had, the W-2, like the actual employee job, was more of like a catch-all. Like I ended up being the director of marketing, again, small team at that corporation, that company. So I wasn't like doing a lot of that coding and stuff like that there. Throughout my collegiate time, I did like learn some Java, I learned some Python, but that wasn't ultimately the degree that I kind of ended up with. So I probably could have went that route. I do have people that I know that went that route, and they're making well over $200,000 now, working for Amazons and things like that, which is definitely a way to go. But for me, what happened was I slid into that employee job, and then I was just like, It was a weird thing. I was like, I feel like I can do, not that I can do this better, but I feel like I can, there are things that I want to change that I can't change. There are things that I want to improve upon, but maybe that's not the priority of the business owners and stakeholders and things. And then that ultimately led me, it's like, well, why don't I just try to find a skill? And at that point, I didn't even know WordPress. And then I learned WordPress. And then I just started really freelancing from that point. And then from there, it kind of just, you know, I was able to make it a full-time thing.
That's fantastic, Mark. Over to you, Kurt.
Well, just kudos to Mark. I mean, he's literally half my age, you know, and he's got the agency going, and he's got the tech chops in the background that I didn't have. I came up through, you know, Macromedia, Dreamweaver, you know, HTML websites and stuff. And then, you know, I just started messing with blogs. And next thing you know, I'm making websites for, you know, small nonprofits and just doing kind of side gigs. And now we've got an agency. It's like it just over time, you know, just keeps growing and growing. So I wish you the best on that expansion.
Appreciate it.
If we had to ask, as you were growing, what you were doing, what would you say would just be like, we don't need the whole list, but just one or two, you know, highlighted major problems, you know, related to building the agency, you know, because everyone comes up against that. You're a freelancer or you're an agency, like you created a job for yourself or you're creating your empire. Like what were the obstacles that you ran into?
Yeah. Great question. Not the first one to get that. You know, obviously I'm not going to give you any crazy answers here. I'm going to give you the ones that everybody has to go through, but goes through in their own way. I would say
likes crazy.
We can get into that. I'm not opposed to going there. But for this specifically, I would say the biggest things are like imposter syndrome and like just charging more from a sense of understanding that what you're doing is of value to people and it's a skill, just like anything else. Like, you know, if your sink breaks, you're going to call a plumber, you're going to have to pay them. And for some reason, as we all know, there's like this weird thing where we feel like sometimes companies don't want to pay a lot or pay at all for like website and web services because it's not like tangible enough sometimes. And I think the biggest thing that I've had to realize was the first website I did was like for $500. And it was honestly way more complex than things I've seen. And I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have custom post types. So I was trying to shove everything. It was a nightmare, but it was such a good learning experience. And I know every part of the world's different, everything like that, but just understanding that you're providing value and most companies care about ROI. That was another big one that I understand, like to try to sell their goal rather than sell this beautiful functional thing that we all can do. Like you have to sell like the actual, what this is going to do for them rather than just the thing itself. That was a big one. And I'll say one more, cause I know other people are doing this, delegation. I've definitely struggled with this. I'm getting better at it, but just delegating it as, you know, kind of you build a team out, whether it's in-house or, you know, even outsourced like 1099 subcontractors, those two things, like understanding your worth, charging your worth, and then also kind of delegation along the way, I think are the biggest things.
Yeah. The charging your worth thing, the imposter syndrome is it's tangible. You can taste it, you know, if you've done this for any length of time. I remember like yesterday, a guy that was senior to me in the automotive field asked me to help him write a resume. I know this isn't a website thing. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, I can help you with your resume. And a week later, I had a beautiful resume, one for him, one for his wife, really well formatted, really well written, the whole thing. And he was like, don't worry, I'll pay for it, you know, whatever. And I was like, okay. And he said, well, how much do I owe you? I said, $75, thinking I'm giving him a deal. And he laughed and walked away. Like, that's crazy. I'm not paying $75. And he thought it was a joke and walked away. And I was like, well, a pro would have charged him like $1,000 for a resume set, right? So that was my first real bout with imposter syndrome. And I was like, I definitely got to start writing things down. I definitely got to put things on contracts. I definitely got to make this peer bigger than it is. And what's easy to us is really difficult for others. We have to remember where our skill set is.
100%.
Yeah. Hey, Jonathan, over to you.
Yeah, before I go on to the next question, I've got a kind of follow-up question. So in your agency, it's based in Pittsburgh, East Coast, near some very high population areas. But are you a generalistic web design agency? So you take on with the proviso that the client has the resources to pay what you normally charge? Or have you found a particular niche that you like to specialize? Or do you still... a generalistic web design agency?
Yeah, this is another one that's often debated, and there's no real right way to do this, but people have, you know, had many different ways of success, because I've been constantly looking at this. Like, there's, you know, website as a service now where you're basically paying per month for, you know, what have you. As far as my model right now, it's, you know, like if I write a proposal, it's a amount of money for the website design. And then we also offer the maintenance and hosting, everything that comes along with WordPress. And I kind of bundle into that a little bit more of like, hey, we're going to meet every month. We're going to talk about things that you, that maybe like, maybe we need to talk about SEO. Maybe we need to talk about some pay-per-click stuff like that. So we can, again, going back to that ROI play. So I bundle that all in there with that. But the specific to the niche, never really found one and have gone back and forth on it. I used to love, kind of like you, Kurt, I built the best, like my favorite project so far was like a learning management website membership platform for wealth advisors. And I was working with the client for their firm, and then they wanted to create a platform that they could train other wealth advisors, you know, memberships and video content and blogs and courses and all that sort of stuff. So I built this whole thing in like Buddy Boss and like LearnDash at the time and all this other stuff. And loved it because of the complexity.
Funny enough, Mark, I know a partner that could have helped you out.
If I would have known Kurt at that point in time, I definitely would have reached out. And the funny thing is, like, I built all of that, and I was like, and I built an Elementor, and I was like it became such a mammoth, and it kind of got slow, and then I had to like refactor some things and all that. But the point of me saying all that is, I really enjoyed that project because I felt like, I don't know if I still feel like this, but I always felt like brochure websites are cool, but they don't like, it's hard. To me, it's harder to sell the ROI of a brochure website rather than like an e-commerce website where it literally says how much money this website is making you every single month. I'm not saying that there's no way to sell the ROI of a brochure website, but to me, I'm just more analytical in that factor. So that was something that I did hold, and I still love building those types of things. But ultimately, it's more of, It's still pretty general. But I do think the last thing I'll say is that a lot of people, I think, have had some success with service-based industries, even if you don't niche, just like something service-based, because it's easier to talk about SEO if they're localized and they're hitting certain places. You could have like city pages or service area pages. That's something that I actually have been doing more of recently. And I think it's just, again, it's more of an easier ROI play in a sense, because it's like, we're not just building you an about, contact, whatever. We're actually filtering and other things that's going to drive traffic there, which is just part of a bigger marketing approach, which, you know, hopefully that's the thing that people actually value when they come to us.
So yeah. What's been some of the best ways that you've generated the right type of clients then, you know, when you go hunting? Do you go hunting, or is it just inbound? You concentrate on SEO and inbound for Pittsburgh area, or what have been some processes where you've gone on the hunt, if you do go hunting, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, so I think most of it has been referral. The vast majority has been referral, because it's like, you know, you get one client and then you do a really good job and they refer you to other people. That being said, though, in my more recent experience, just creating content around this and sharing it with my network on like LinkedIn, for instance, has generated a lot more buzz. I've already gotten like more leads, and the company has just kind of started to grow a little bit more because of that. The other thing I would say is not referral from your past customers, but I don't know this because I haven't studied it to an incredible depth, but I don't hear enough about it. So I'm going to make more content on it. Partnering with other providers in similar verticals, for instance, like in ours, like we don't want to touch email, right? We don't necessarily want to touch, you know, the technical stuff that like a business might need, a corporation or, you know, a small business. So like one of the ways that I've literally gotten leads is from partnering with technical, like IT people. And then they like end up maybe building a simple website for somebody, but then they're like, hey, they need something better. Hey, you know, go see Find a Tech. So that's one way. But I really think that the biggest thing is kind of content marketing in a way. The only other thing that I would say is, just from a messaging perspective, is an incredible amount of like authenticity. I'm working on a redesign for Find a Tech right now. It is going to be the most direct, authentic thing that you've ever seen, because I've realized who I do not want to work with. And like, if they fall into that category, it's going to be like, either that's totally fine, go find somebody else, or like, here, like, we will send you somewhere else. Like, cause we know who would possibly want like a client like you. So go that route. Cause that's the biggest thing with agencies and people doing this stuff. It's like, you got to know who you want. You got to know what kind of websites you want to build, what kind of people we want to work with. And unfortunately, it just takes some time to figure that out sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. On to the next question. Unless you've got a follow through.
No, I'll be quiet.
Too quiet. This is a fun one. So, obviously, this podcast, we're aimed at WordPress and Bootstrap SaaS. I kind of cover both because they're the two areas that interest me the most, Mark. So, but we have competitors. I know it's a shock horror, Mark. WordPress, we have competitors. And I've listed a few here. So, first of all, have you tried some of the competitors? And before we go into the specifics, this list of four that I've outlined, where do you think WordPress is in 2024 compared to some of the leading competitors in the professional agency, regional agency market?
Yeah. So I'm not going to lie. I've been using WordPress since 2018. I had a short stint with like Webflow, and I have definitely worked with Shopify and like Wix and Squarespace. I wouldn't say to the degree that, obviously not to the degree that I worked with WordPress. So some of the stuff that I would comment on here is not going to be like, I'm in there every day and I hate this specific thing about it.
No, I'm asking for a general, yeah, you know, the business, sure, side, the reflection, you know.
For sure.
When you're talking to your other agencies, owners, if you do talk to them, are they kind of moving away from, you get the sense they're moving away from WordPress and looking increasingly at these other solutions?
Mm-hmm, definitely, yeah. So most of the people that I've talked to are obviously WordPress people, as far as agency owners and everything like that. I don't hear anything about people wanting to move away from WordPress. I think WP Minute, Matt Medeiros, just an hour ago, had a chat with Sam Harrison over at Webflow. That was a really interesting one. And the thought there was kind of comparing WordPress and Webflow. I thought that was really insightful because I didn't know too much about Webflow. I think Webflow is probably, if I was going to switch, that would probably be the first one that I would look at, it seems like, because it seems like it's the most robust. But again, when you really break it down, you have to ask yourself about the open source question always comes up. Is that's a high reason that people stay with WordPress. I think from the general landscape of agency, if we're talking like that.
Yeah, it's the agency folk, you know, because you're in agency, you know.
Exactly.
It's about finding a tool that delivers what the client wants, but in the most efficient, cost-effective way, because a project that spirals or inflates will cost out, you know, it's just eating away at margins for the agency. So they're interested in getting this out. You know, that satisfies the client's aspirations, but does it in a way that's cost effective.
Let me give you one specific thought on this that I've heard many times is sometimes people say, use the best tool for the job. And while I understand that, I think from a scalability perspective, maybe you could pick like maybe a WordPress and a Shopify if you don't want to do like WooCommerce or anything. But like, from what I understand, let's use Webflow as an example. I don't think it does e-commerce extremely well. So like, why you would pick one? Like, I'm just thinking from a bigger perspective. As I continue to grow the agency, if I would have to have almost multiple teams where like you had a Webflow team and you had like a WordPress team. So my thought from an agency perspective is I've actually always wanted to keep it as consolidated and concise as possible. I specifically built my stack and evolved it over time where I could create smaller sites if I needed to, not maybe real small sites, but like a standard site. But then I could also, you know, maybe get like a Lifter LMS involved or something like that and build like a more advanced site. You know what I mean? Like, so that's why I love WordPress, because you can absolutely build small, cheaper projects, but you definitely build bigger ones as well. I would rather have that all in one type thing than multiple different tools and have to learn and deal with all those different tools and all the other benefits.
It's part of this, but if you don't want to publicly state it, I totally understand. But yep. I know it also varies. But what is your where does your pricing start actually mark? You know, are you prepared to divulge that? You rather not?
100%. I'm an open book. The average project, I don't really want to do anything under $10,000 ever again. Because, and again, I preface it with, I live in the United States. Okay. So I don't know how it changes.
I'm moving to Pittsburgh.
I don't know if I'm fishing in the right pond. I haven't figured that out fully yet, but the point is that I used to say that, but I will put one caveat in here for anybody that just hears that and is like, wow, I wish I could do that. It's not necessarily I want to do websites for 10,000 or more. It's not necessarily that. It's more like I have screwed myself so many times that I just want to do this amount of work for this amount of money rather than doing this amount of work for this amount of money, which I've just done so many times. Like I told you, websites, crazy.
I totally agree with you. And it's fantastic you're in the position where you've got enough leads coming in. So with that statement, I would imagine that you're working mostly with established companies with a gross turnover of $500,000 to $1 million. I think, is that about right?
That's pretty fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you go $500,000, they're probably not in a position to pay 10,000. And to be truthful about it, but there's plenty of companies doing that. So especially in Pittsburgh, I'd imagine there's enough companies out there. So let's go to the fun. So I'm just going to name it. I just want your instant gut reaction, Mark.
Yep.
And give it a mark out of 1 to 5. You know. So, you should be used to this, Dad. You've been with me for almost 2 years, a year and a half. Wick Studio. What's your initial gut reaction? Is that here?
Maybe a 3. I don't know. 2. It's tough. I've been in Wix recently. It's not fun. It's not fun. So, well, yeah.
Can you elaborate? Not fun, because actually, I remember the days where I had a retail business in the UK and I did a degree and I did a master's. As a mature student, and I did web design as a hobby, and I got in as a Flash developer, action scripting, and I got into JavaScript in the early days.
Yeah.
And Wix used to be all Flash based. It was a Flash enterprise. Is it proved enormously, my understanding of it is, and they're spending enough on YouTube adverts for their studio solution. My God, every advert I see is for Wix Studio. So you said, horrible. What's some of the things you didn't like?
I mean, I would just say that I like to think that I am pretty adept at taking in a new UI and understanding this isn't WordPress, right? It's not the same. And WordPress has its own problems, obviously, which we will get to, I guess, right? But WordPress
you've got to do that. I'll classified as a hater, but some real arseholes in the WordPress community, you know, some real fucking arseholes.
I don't know. I think you mean well. So the admin, for instance, WP admin, I could look at that and what I try to do if I ever explain this to people, I don't want to explain to people how to use WordPress. I want to explain how to use a CMS and the principles of what WordPress has kind of done well for the most part and page builders have done well. And hopefully Gutenberg continues to trend going well. Those types of things, I wasn't able to even understand when I was in the Wix space for a short amount of time and kind of playing around with it here in the last year or two.
So you've got that feeling, I'm a web professional. I almost got these many years.
Yeah.
This shouldn't be this bloody hard to get it going. Is that all UIs through your mind?
Yeah. I mean, UIs and UXs are tough. I'm not trying to shit on Wix necessarily, but I'm saying the biggest thing that always needs to happen though is understanding who these target markets are for. And again, WordPress has its own issues in this regard with the different tools and everything, but understanding is this built for a DIYer, or is this built for an agency owner that is trying to produce websites at scale, which is very different than somebody just trying to go. It's not like either one is right or wrong. It's just two completely different things. And there's no way they could be the exact same. So that was my vibe when I was in there with the Wix stuff. But again, it could have changed since then, but that's kind of my thought.
Well, I think they're spending all their budget on advertising myself, but there we go. All right, on to the next one. Squarespace. Initial reaction, then score, Mark.
So Squarespace, I've actually been in more recently because I've had some other colleagues of mine that are building in Squarespace, and I'm like, oh God. And they asked me, I'll give you an example though. They literally, and this isn't specifically about them, but I do think it's actually a broader issue that needs to be talked about more. If you are doing like design, right? Like some other vertical of design, and then you get asked, hey, can you do a website too? And then you say yes. And then you say, oh yeah, I'll just throw it in Squarespace or Shopify or whatever. The thing that literally happens to me, because I'm like literally friends and associates with these types of people, are like, hey, you know all about websites. Can you help me connect my DNS and stuff? And I'm like, bro, what are you talking? Like I'm not trying to like make fun or poke fun at those people. I'm just saying from like, if you take a step back and you look at the situation, you are literally telling people that you know what to do when it comes to a website. At the core of that is literally connecting a domain to hosting or to a platform. And if we're having trouble with that, that's like a fundamental piece. So I'm going a little off track here. I'm giving you an anecdote with the Squarespace situation. But my point is like, I went into Squarespace and actually I was like, this is a little weird the way they tell you to do this. Like just even like setting up like the DNS record. So I don't fault those people specifically, but I think it speaks to the fact again, that it's not built for like people that are actually trying to do this at scale.
No, I think you were highly insightful because when I came to America, I worked for a couple regional agencies for a few years. And real working for like kind of regional large agencies, and it was a wake-up call, the crazy stuff I was asked to do. But it appeals where there's a lot of PR or people that are like one or two agency and they're more in the PR graphic space, and they just love Squarespace because it kind of, their clientele, they can just throw it up and they hate WordPress. But yeah, it's, I think the UR is better than Wix. Would you agree with that?
I would say so. Yeah. Yeah. It's a better platform like that, but I think it still has similar types of issues.
But I don't think, if your agency, you would use Wix or Squarespace. I just don't think you would do so. I think your insights were spot on. On to the next one. Webflow. Your initial, you didn't give a mark for Squarespace. You slacked.
I would say let's put Wix at a 2 and Squarespace at a 3.
Yeah, I think I agree. Webflow, what do you think of it, and give it a mark? Don't slack. You've got to give it a mark.
I'll give it a mark right away. I would honestly, if I don't think Shopify was on the list, if we're talking about the same list. So I would say that Webflow is probably, and Shopify is a little different animal, but overall Webflow, I would give maybe a 3.5 or a 4, just because I'm going to give WordPress a 5, like if we were ranking it overall. And Webflow would be, again, like I said, probably my next thing. Like if something happened crazy to WordPress, which we never know, right? Then it would probably be the next place that I would at least consider if I was going to continue to do the things that I'm doing, because of the way that I was in it. And I was like, this at least makes sense to me, especially from coming from now dabbling in like my years in Elementor and now my years in Bricks. Like it's got it. You know what I mean? It's got it. It's got a lot of really good things going for it. I don't know about the e-commerce situation. Another thing is just not just the open source, you know, not just it not being open source, but more so the idea of, and I don't know because I'm speaking slightly out of my depth here, but like what I've heard is there's like add-ons and things that you have to kind of integrate.
Well, they're going to need to get more money out of you. That's, yes. It's a SaaS, so yeah. It's dependent on all these add-ons, right, and these extras.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that I don't pay for plugins and things now, but I think it's a different type of situation and different type of system, obviously, than like a WordPress. So again, we criticize certain things about WordPress, but I do still think it's the best that we've got. I'd put Webflow kind of right below it there at like 3.5 or 4.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah. What a name. What, the last one, but I can't stand the name. Doodah. Am I pronouncing it correctly? Doodah?
I don't even know. Honestly, I've never seen it other than in your list.
I might be a dyslexic, listeners and viewers, but I think this applies in general. Do not select names that people can't pronounce for your startup company. It is not a good idea. Don't be too creative because the domain is available at a price that you can afford. It does need to be pronounceable. So what do you think of their solution?
This is the first time I'm looking at the website here on my screen, so I don't even know if I can comment on it.
You can't find it on their agency, the price, so that tells you something. But I went to their normal, and it's similar prices to Webflow when you go to the normal version because they've got no price on the agency page, which was a little bit alarming.
Right. If I could just give an opinion on that without knowing anything here.
Yeah, it never stops me. Well,
the only thing I would say is I'm looking at Built With, and it's like, I guess it's, if I'm reading this correctly, it's 900, almost a million.
Yeah,
I've
never come across anybody. It's like finding a website built on Drupal, isn't it? I've never come across it.
So the only thing I would say is, that's interesting. Does Webflow actually only have 500,000? And
yeah, they
didn't even know that.
They reckon they got more. I've never heard it.
Yeah, I have no idea. But I would have to assume, without doing more research right now, that Duda is like a really specific market almost. Maybe in a way. Like, is it? I don't know. Am I? I don't know if I'm barking up the
wrong tree. They're spending like $3 million a week on YouTube adverts. So I think that's their problem. But there we go. I think my English sarcasm is starting to come out there. I think it's time to have a break and Kirk can ring with you. We're going to go for our break, folks, and we'll be back in a few moments.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
Yes, we've had a butchers on the competition, folks. We've had some fun. Mark's up for it. Kirk's eyes are just getting wider. But before we go into the second half of the show, I want to point out that you should sign up for the WP Tonic newsletter. I write it myself, folks, and I cover WordPress and tech every week. You won't find this in the other WordPress newsletters. And it, like I say, what could go wrong with me writing it? So to get this weekly rag, all you have to do is go over to wp-tonic.com/newsletter. I don't see you typing, Mark. You should be going right now. Sorry. So wp-tonic.com/newsletter and sign up, and it will be in your inbox every Monday. What more could you ask for? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get from that newsletter. So let's go over to you, Kirk.
Well, I'm going to change up the question a little bit. We were going to ask, you know, about Gutenberg and how you think it's going for 2024. But in your previous answers, Mark, you mentioned both Elementor and Brix.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, without going, you know.
Oh, this is where I get the hate mail. This is where it starts. These fanatics, religious fanatics will start pestering me. All right.
So without, you know, making an encyclopedia out of it, what was your general experience in, you know, acclimating yourself to Elementor? And then how would you compare that to your use case with Brix?
So when I first got into the WordPress ecosystem, when I first learned about it, my first experience, and this was again in like 2017, 2018. So it was definitely, I'm not sure when Elementor came out and when page builders became a thing, because I haven't looked at the history and I didn't know at that point. But when I first installed WordPress, I thought I had to like install a theme and just use like a template theme, like, you know, something that was pre-custom designed at the point, and you could just draw pictures in here. You had no customization. You couldn't move anything. I was like, what the hell? I almost left WordPress because I thought of that. Then I found
Kennedy.
Yeah. And well, then I found Elementor, and I was like, oh, well, I want to create a website like anything, you know, like where I could drop pictures anywhere. I could do different things. You know, I could leverage maybe some CSS or whatever. And it ended up being a pretty simple adoption process, I want to say, over time, once I got Elementor and Elementor Pro. And then the biggest change for me right around that time, I was talking about the membership website. I found Jet Engine. I was able to do like nested querying loops and everything. That was a huge game changer because it made my functionality go way through the roof. But so to answer that part, Elementor was always pretty straightforward to me. Like it seemed like a good platform as far as I don't want to say DIY, but like learning curve wise, didn't seem too crazy to me. I was able to pick it up. Then recently, over the last like 6 months to a year, I realized I actually butted up against those situations with Elementor and like the idea of like Divception and just the way they created it like long ago, which again, they've created an incredible product, but like it has issues once you start to scale, unless you do a lot of work to kind of feel like to rein that in. So once I realized that and I had those issues for myself, I was like, I need to look for a different solution. I found guys like Kevin Geary, Dave Foy, like I found like Bricks. I was looking at different options as well, Breakdance and all that. And I was like, this seems way like
you have to swear.
Did I swear?
Yeah, Breakdance. Did you?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. All right. Well, I didn't know we weren't allowed to swear. My bad. Just kidding. Yeah. So anyway, won't say that again. But anyway, I'm looking at those different tools, right? And I'm thinking, Bricks seems like the closest thing that I could get to being kind of like a developer without actually being a developer. Like you put a heading in, it just puts in the HTML rather than all this other stuff. So I tried it and I loved it. And I thought it was really there's a lot there, but I felt like it was pretty easy to adopt as well, because it went back to more of the traditional way that I was kind of like accustomed to a long time ago, where it was like actually more of a, I'm not even using like a lot of the predefined elements and things like testimonial sliders and stuff. Like I was already kind of accustomed to doing that in Elementor, building it myself. But now this is just a better approach. So I don't know if that answers the question, but it was easy with Elementor, and it was almost easier with Bricks just based off my experience. I don't know if that's the same for everyone though.
Yeah, I'm actually going through a little bit of a fit myself. So I was kind of like you described. I didn't know Elementor was out when I was, you know, I was trying to figure things out with the old code editor, trying to go through and tweak things and change things and some CSS stuff. And I wasn't brilliant in that sense. So I struggled. And then I started to adopt Elementor a little bit, and then I got a little spoiled and I started putting it on everything, right? And I just started like building wacky things at high speed, and I was really enjoying it. And then, you know, I'll say it publicly. They had a couple of updates come out, and here I am hosting customers' websites, and these websites went to white screens, you know, with the updates. Yeah. And I was like, so, you know, and my email's blowing up. You know, I had a real job. This was a side hustle at the time. Right. So now my side hustles become my headache, and I'm trying to fix these problems, you know, roll back plugins and get people's websites back up and stuff. And I tried Bricks. I just tried Bricks again last week, and the same thing happened. I am not a developer minded person. I'm more of an implementer minded person. So I would use the sliders and the testimonials and the things. Mm-hmm. And when I go to move those things over in Bricks, my screen starts flashing like crazy, and I have a hard time even figuring out where the element's actually landing on the page, right? It just, the visual experience isn't smooth to me. But I tried to put Elementor in that site, and it locked up that website this week. So I'm like, you know, Gutenberg just continues to get better and better for me. And I'm thinking I might be a blocks builder for the rest of my life if things don't clean up with the page builders. And without going too long, Jonathan, I think that takes us to the next question, which is, you know, what are your thoughts on Gutenberg focusing on usability for the agency owners, you know, this year?
Yeah. So that was real quick on that, Kurt. Like, I totally feel that. And again, it parlays into this. I still go back and more content that I watch, both sides will say, right? I don't really like the idea of sides, but you know, but both every angle, right? Like, the more I see, the harder it is for me to give a positive answer to that question, because I just did like a two and a half hour stream like last week. And I was like trying to understand you can't really say the word marketing of WordPress, the WordPress project, because I think they will even say that there isn't really marketing. It's a project, right? I mean, there's marketing team, da, 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 but it's not really like, they're not spending thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars on ads and stuff. Totally understand that. But my thing is, like, everything that I'm seeing is exactly like what you're saying, as far as the Gutenberg is continuing to get good. The people are amazingly talented and they're working hard. The direction and, you know, as Jonathan points out, like, the management of it is questionable in a lot of times, because it's like, where are we headed? Who are we building this for? I don't think it matters if you're building like an open source project or a product. Are you headed in the right way or not? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, who are you building it for? Right. And to me, you ask a question like, what are they doing for agencies? And they're definitely doing something for certain agencies, from what I understand. But I am not one of these agencies. These agencies that I'm talking about are like, I guess, 10 up, where everything is like crazily like gift controlled and all that sort of stuff. And they're working with sites that are like obnoxiously huge or something. I need to dig more into that. But to rein the answer in, as a small agency owner, which small, medium size, which I think a lot of us are, I don't really know if Gutenberg is doing anything like for us. It feels like it's being built directly for like the average WordPress user, which is apparently a DIYer, which I'm totally fine with. That makes sense. But I feel like it's a miscommunication. Like, that's the whole thing. It's like, it's not like it's a bad product necessarily. It's not like it's not getting better. It's just, it's always been like a miscommunication as far as I've been kind of like seeing and hearing it. And it's just it's just taking a long time too, obviously, as we know. So it's just a lot of tough variables there.
Yeah. And there's definitely a split between full site editing versus the block editor, you know, and it's all in the same. I mean, that's like the same, right? Comes a WordPress core.
Yeah.
But if I go with Cadence and the block editor and the Cadence Pro stuff, I got unbelievable options in that interface to build and design and work there without technically having a page builder in place. Right. But to your point, like you said earlier, right tool for the right job. Sometimes I jump into one of my old clients' websites that's on Elementor, and it takes me like 35 seconds to realize, it's an Elementor site. Mm-hmm. And I go in, I go click, click, bing, bang, boom, boom, save, publish, done. And it's like, man, that was easy.
Yeah. I don't know. It's for, like, yeah, again, but, for me,
go ahead, Rob. Be truthful, Mark. I think some of the problems that Gutenberg's faced is you can apply it to Elementor. Because I think when you get a very large user base and you really don't focus on what it really is meant for, and I think this has affected Elementor, because is it aimed at the DIY? But a lot of agencies in the WordPress space adopted Elementor because it was clearly in its time the best solution, best page builder. Obviously, Beaver Builder initially took market share. They're still going. They're still a great team. But Elementor, with their VC backing and they're under Ben, I think Ben, their marketing director, who's coming back, he's actually coming back on the show in May. He's come and they had very at the budget, and they're very creative in their marketing. And the core product was the best at the time. But and it was the agency market that really pushed it, really gave it traction. And then they wanted to go into the DIY market and in self and hosted and blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
And they lost focus, in my opinion. And they're trying to get that back, but the competition. But when it comes to Gutenberg, I think they've got a similar problem, because and I don't agree with everything Kevin says, But the one thing I do agree in, Kevin, trying to produce a solution that can appeal not only to the professional agency market, but also the pure DIY individual is practically impossible, in my opinion. It would have been better off that the true DIY product was WordPress.com, and you offered a more sophisticated solution for the agency for WordPress.org. But that's too common sense a solution. We've got to go on a windy road, haven't we? But where I don't agree with Kevin is that I understand why he focuses it, because he's so, and I want to see if you agree with this statement. Is Kevin's focus on code quality. And don't get me wrong, code quality is important to me. But he, because of his products and his background, and he really believes this, he says, well, the code quality of Gutenberg is awful. I've got to be honest with you, apart from the most top projects I've been involved with, any project I've been involved in, I've never had anybody come to me and say, I want to audit of the code quality. They want a site that functions, that's quick to load, that has good SEO. They're the things that the end user, I've never had somebody come to me, apart from the most top projects I've been, which were over $50,000 to $100,000, come to me and talk about code quality, or does it adhere to the modern CSS framework or layout. So I understand Kevin's fixation about it, and I also understand his community, because they are totally in that world and they're fixated about it as well. But I've, as an agency owner, I've never had a client below 50,000 ever bring it up. What's your thoughts on what I've just said, Paul?
Yeah, so I think I'm a good example of this. I don't think I said this yet. Well, a little bit with the Elementor Divception thing, but that actually was causing me issues. Like the code quality, I feel like to some degree started causing me issues in that realm, maybe other things as well. But I was always on like good hosting and things like that. So it wasn't like a shared hosting problem, you know? So my thought on that is I am not as, I'm not reading every line of code. I'm not seeing all that, but I can look in the DOM and kind of see like, you know, roughly what it's looked like. I think that that is an issue, that it's only a problem when it becomes a problem. And like you said, like if it's over $50,000 and people actually care about that, then obviously you need to make sure that you have a tool that can do that. But if you never plan on doing that, then probably not the end of the world. Like I never tell anybody use Bricks because like specifically because of the code quality. I reference that because I think it is a nice feature.
Here we go. We've got a comment here. So full control of code is mandatory, not a nice thing to have. I'm sorry, Isaac. Below 50,000, your bloody clients don't care shit, mate. I'm sorry. You care because you're a web professional and you just love this. And I appreciate you being on the show, but clients don't care under a certain budget. They just don't care. It's a delusion. Yeah. It's a fantasy, folks.
But one thing I would say is, and I know Isaac, he's in my stream. Appreciate you being here, brother. The one thing I would say specifically to that is, it is definitely nuanced. Like the one thing I would say is that from accessibility law and things like that, like apparently there is a bigger push now with regulatory stuff on accessibility. Right, Kevin talks about this all the time. So if you're building with a builder that's not doing that, I think you are putting you and potentially your clients at a little bit of risk. How much of a risk? I don't know. We'd have to see. But it's something to consider for sure. I'm using Bricks because of some of those reasons, but I can't tell you that I'm literally like looking at every single line of code. I'm just trying to do some of the best practices as I can, but there's a ton of them. Like, I mean, I don't know how Kevin sleeps at night knowing all these things. Like, he's just like, he's a robot. So I don't know. Maybe, I don't know if I'll ever get there.
I love him to bits. I think one of the few, because we are big in cadence, because for the type of clientele that we're helping. But I also, to be truthful, if it's a higher class client, I'm probably looking at a pure hand-coded solution to some extent. I don't know. I think one of the players that if you're in the professional agency space and you want to use Gutenberg, I think GeneratePress are doing good things. And I think they've just introduced a class-based system to the solution. The problem is that they've really aimed it at the agency because you just get a blank page. And it's really for the custom website starting around $10,000. If you're not the 5,000 market, you're doing a semi-custom job, basically. If you're going to make any money out of it, you're taking a theme and you're customizing it to some degree. But that's only my... So on to the next question, which I'm going to throw over to Kurt so I can get out of this because I've just dug an enormous hole for myself, haven't I?
Maybe just a little hole. We ask everybody, almost everybody, Mark, the deal with AI and how it's affecting them. So are you currently using AI and like what do you see it largely affecting for you and your agency in the next year, year and a half?
Yeah, so I'm definitely utilizing it here and there, like with, you know, either images like Midjourney or ChatGPT. I've heard a lot of good things about Claude recently, so I might check that out. I am, you know, to kind of keep it short on AI, like I'm bullish on the idea and what it can do for you. I still think that for the foreseeable future, at least in the short term, we're still going to need to do stuff. You know, like it's not going to like, it can automate things, it can make things way faster, but the thing that I found is I'm actually a terrible prompter and like at times, and you have to be,
there's no hope for you, Mark. You're doomed.
You have to be a good prompter to get anything worth its salt out of these tools, or else it's just going to, you know, spit out like super, you know, generic.
Sometimes it's quicker just to do it.
Exactly. So like, that's a really big thing that people have to understand, that it's not just, you know, can't just read your mind, know exactly what you want. It's literally like telling an employee what to do. Like you have to give them good instruction. There's still a lot of stuff there.
So, my ex-wife expected me just to read her mind. You know that. She just expected me to know.
Guess didn't work out.
I've got that ability to read minds.
That's funny. But the only other thing that I would say specifically to the website stuff is, and it kind of goes back to the other Gutenberg things, and it's a broader question at like a 50,000 foot view, is where do we ultimately see this going in the direction? Like if we took a look at how many people are building their own sites versus how many businesses want sites for cheap versus how many businesses are willing to invest. And then we think about how many people are building their own sites versus agencies building their own sites. Where does AI end up playing into all of that? And that's a really interesting question. And I think that that may sneak up on us. Not that it's going to take jobs necessarily, but I think there is a fair amount of people that might be like, instead of I'm going to build a website agency and I'm not going to care that much and I'm just going to like do like the minimum, it might lop off some of those people. Because if I was a business owner and I could go to ZipWP and just literally zip something together, if they start marketing directly, it's about like the business owners that want the thing, but they don't want to go all the way into building it. So they could just be like type a couple things in and then have something. That's where it might get a little interesting. But I don't necessarily see that affecting my business or people that want to build those bigger websites because it is a different audience. You know, it's more established businesses, more like that. So I'm not like worried, but I do like kind of see
all... You're deluding yourself actually, Mark, I think, because I was listening this morning for my walk this week in startups and they had a guy from MIT and he's got an AI called Liquid AI. If you listen to the latest episode, and he reckons in 3 to 5 years, they're going to have general AI and that will be the end of us. The machines are going to just exterminate us. So just enjoy yourself for the next 3 years.
Whatever. We're just chilling then.
Just have a good time.
Shut it down tomorrow.
Just prepare yourself for the end. They're coming for you, Mark.
So, see how it goes.
So... I didn't understand. I understood some of the podcast.
I'm not the sharpest tool, but yeah, it was a complicated podcast. I recommend it to the listeners and viewers. If you want to scare yourself, listen to that last episode of This Week in Startups. That get you going. So on to the last question. So, so if you had your own time machine, you know, from H.G. Wells, and you could go back to the beginning of your career, that was so near compared to me. I've got most of it. And on your business journey, what essential piece of advice would you give to yourself?
It's a great question. I would honestly say, like, understanding kind of a joint. It's kind of a joint thing. Want to stammer. I love Matt, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, look at this funny Tommy. The bloody stammer. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for the kind words. Yeah, cheers, mate. It'll be so true, isn't it? It's so true as well. All right.
That's funny. I would say it's kind of a conjoined thing of just don't be afraid to start talking. Like, as you start to learn things, you have that little bit of imposter syndrome and you don't know if you can do something. But the thing is that if you want to actually grow your business or your personal brand or whatever, you have to start talking. And I don't mean like just start spouting out random shit that like you think you know already. It's like, oh, like if I, like 5 years ago, oh, mentor is the best thing in the world. I don't necessarily mean that. If you take a more like humble approach, you can just start getting into conversations. I already do it now, like just getting into conversations by asking questions and being inquisitive rather than like forcing your opinion. Certainly we all have our opinions. But if you ask those questions and you get involved, then people start to know you, your business, whatever your goal is. So I would say do that as early as possible, as reasonably possible, because nobody knows what the hell they're doing, like ultimately. Like it's everybody is always trying to figure it out. And I think that a lot of times, I know I was and other people are like disillusioned thinking that they can't do a live stream or they can't make some video content or they can't say ask questions and things. And I would just say do that as quickly as possible because it's only going to help you as long as you're doing it kind of like from a place of wanting to understand more and wanting to help people. I think that's probably the thing I would say.
That's fantastic, Mark. So thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a blast. I've enjoyed it. I've been on
thank
the
you
this morning early. I'm an alcoholic. Kurt reckons I'm an alcoholic. Mark, what's the best way for people to find out about what you're up to and your latest posts and views, whatever you got to offer the bigger community?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you just type in mjs.bio, that's a link will take you directly to all my, it's kind of like a landing page with my socials and a couple things I've going on. My newsletter is there if you want to subscribe. But yeah, man, this has been a blast. I appreciate you, Jonathan, Kirk. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah. And Kirk, what's the best way for people to find out about what you're up to, Kurt?
Well, in the next 40 seconds, I'll be hosting the pre-sales call for Lifter LMS, and you can always find me on LinkedIn.
I will be sending a message through Slack. Thank you so much, listeners and viewers. If you want to support the show, please share on social media and also join the YouTube, the WP Tonic YouTube channel. Got a load of additional content that you're bound to enjoy. We're seeing it's got some fab guests coming up in April and May. You're going to be amazed who I've persuaded to come on this old rag. We'll see you soon, folks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.